Blog Talk Radio.
NFL Week 15 coming up. We have a great show today lined up. We're going to be talking women's gridiron this weekend. Huge matchups. Two games in the slate on the LFL Australia schedule. Last week's inaugural kickoff, which was New South Wales Surge at the State of Origin match versus the Queensland Brigade. So we'll go into a little bit with that in a couple minutes here. And then obviously last night, Western Australia Angels featuring Adrian Purnell. They were taking on the Victoria Maidens. So we'll talk about that game last night as well. And if you missed it, you can go to the YouTube LFL site at Legends Football League, and you can watch the New South Wales Week 1 victory, 44-6 over Queensland. And we'll take a look at that and dissect that. Welcome to Gridiron Beauties Radio. My name is Oscar Lopez, along with Erica Lynn Anderson. Are you on, Erica?
I'm here. Hey, everybody.
Awesome. So, Erica, huge matchups this weekend in the women's game, for the most part. We'll dive into the NFL afterwards, but women's LFL, which was having a lot of, you know, feminist, basically, backlashes throughout for this weekend's game. It's on YouTube. It was actually played last week, but it's tape delayed this week. But we had a huge roundup for this week in terms of the women's slate, so we'll go into a couple of those games. But if you were watching last week's game, for me, it was 1 a.m. Pacific when the game kicked off, obviously Australia time. So that's kind of weird, but 1 a.m., we're up late, taking care of it. And we want to thank at Ratty1979, which is Christian Radcliffe, for his great tweetcast on the broadcast for week one of the LFL Australia slate that featured the State of Origin match. And if you understand State of Origin in Australia, the State of Origin match is usually New South Wales versus Queensland. And it's sort of like a bitter matchup. It's sort of like North versus West. You know, it's just a rivalry. So for the LFL to feature that matchup was the launching kickoff word. So New South Wales featured Chloe Butler as well as Monique Gaxiola. Monique Gaxiola and Chloe Butler, the staples of the Los Angeles Temptation, the three-time champs. And they were on the New South Wales team. So given a boost of veteranship, leadership, the New South Wales squad, along with Jacinda Barclay, and an amazing game for the rookie sensation of Bonnie Gillespie, two touchdowns, as well as Barclay with the touchdown. So Chloe Butler had an amazing game as well with some sacks and pressures up front all day. Based on the leadership of obviously Gaxiola, and you'll watch that on YouTube on the Legends Football League channel, and you can see why the New South Wales was ranked number one coming into this week one LFL Australia matchup. Let's not discredit the Queensland Brigade. They played a very good game right off the bat. They almost scored, and it was a great stand goal line stand by the New South Wales squad to deny them their first score. Obviously, we'd be talking about Jane Caldwell being the first first woman to score in LFL Australia, but unfortunately, that didn't happen. So we are talking that Bonnie Gillespie being the first player to score in week one of the LFL Australia season, and historic, obviously, at that point because she's the first person to score a touchdown in that league. The other person that we have to notable on the game, that if you saw it on YouTube, Jane Caldwell played pretty well throughout the game, just could not muster enough points to get in the end zone, but they did garner some good field position. Cody House, we got to give that hats off to her, both on offense and defense. Cody House had an amazing game receiving-wise and as well as defensively. And then hats off to Tamar Fennell as well for a good return game as well as aggressive defensive stand. So if you didn't watch it, you can go to the YouTube site on LFL Legends Football League, and you can watch it. It's up there now. So great game. And then this past weekend on Saturday, it was week two of the LFL Saturday Night Football. It was the Western Australian Angels getting beaten by the Victoria Maitens 32-26 on the backs of Jules Parker, which was the MVP for game two, along with the quarterback standout of P. Kula Reed, who played a good game on that, and Tali Greenwood as well. So the Angels coming in with U.S. import Adrian Purnell, along with number two ranked Leah Turnbull. And unfortunately, they come up a little bit short. Victoria has no U.S. imports, so that tells you a lot about the Aussie girls on that team in terms of their dedication, commitment, and obviously a big win for them at home. So now we'll see how the Maitens react on the road as they go into the slate. But that game will be obviously viewed next week on delay, and you can catch it also at the LFL Legends Football League on YouTube. And we look forward to that, and we'll have some notes next week as to the feedback on to the on-field and who was the actual, difference maker there. But the MVP, again, was Jules Parker, so congratulations to her for a great opening game at home, Victoria Maitens. Let's give a shout-out to the Gridiron New South Wales champions, the Northwestern Phoenix, which won the Opal Bowl, the inaugural Opal Bowl, 28-12 over the Newcastle Cobras. And another notable there is UTS, which was the best team all season long in Gridiron New South Wales in this inaugural season, led by Tammy Bosco, the head coach. Unfortunately, towards the end of the season there, during week eight and during the latter weeks of the season, the tables turned with a couple losses, and the points difference there ended up putting Northwestern Phoenix into the final with the Newcastle Cobras. Beginning of the season, everybody thought UTS was going to be in the finals, and unfortunately, that turned out to be not the case. So Newcastle Cobras and the Northwestern Phoenix, both 5-3 coming into the matchup, now 6-3 for Northwestern Phoenix, and they become the first champion of the Gridiron New South Wales League, which should take off next season, and they've done a great job there. Give a shout-out to Northwestern Phoenix player Timmy Pike for following us on Instagram, and we appreciate that as well. Along with the other champions that we mentioned the weeks before, the Queensland champions, which was the Female Gridiron League of Queensland, and that was the Gold Coast Stingrays with our No Good Football supporter, Lauren Evans, as well as Dini Pepe as well. Somerville 2 champions, they beat out Logan City Jets 12-8, and the MVP there was Christy Moran. Victoria also had their champions. They crowned Western Foxes, which was the original team in that league, to kick off, and the Western Foxes won 32-8 versus the Lady Raiders. So good, strong points on the Australian scene. The traditional kit leagues are just blowing up. I mean, the excitement over women's gridiron in Australia in the traditional game is very, very high right now. And they are looking forward to, obviously, 2017 when they can field a Australian national team for the IFAF World Championships in 2017. And we want to give a shout-out to also for getting the head coaching for Queensland, Coach Rob McKinnon, head coach of, obviously, the women's champion GC Stingrays, was announced that he would be the Queensland Women's State Team head coach. They bid for a berth. Each team or each section of Australia will have a team squad, and they will compete in a tournament within the country to decide who goes to camp to represent the team from all the different regions. So it's kind of an exciting time there in Australia because they're trying to field that one team to match up for the World Championship. So great job there. If we go to Mexico now, I want to give a shout-out to, before we leave Mexico, in Australia. I want to give a shout-out to at NDCGA, which is the Gridiron Australia Coaching, who gave us the update for the Gridiron New South Wales scores and the results. So we thank him for networking with us and giving us the updates. I'm under the weather today, so if I sound a little bit offbeat, I just had a little bit of cold this weekend started. So other than that, I'm in good shape. And then we also mentioned at Ratty1979, and at Ratty1979 will be tweetcasting the next two games as well for the New South Wales Surge. We also had week two at Tommy IEU, which is Tommy, and he did our week two network tweetcast of the Maidens Angels game. So we appreciate his efforts as well. And we can't forget at Mix Sports News, part of the LFL 360 crew, who also participated in that tweetcast as well for feedback and giving us some insights on game day in Victoria at the AMI Park venue. We go to Mexico now, and it was the LIBF, the Liga Ibericana, the Bikini Football. The Final Four was slated for this season. Diosis, Aztecas, we're going to take on the Angels. They have met a couple times in the season. Diosis, Aztecas have pretty much owned the Angels at this point going forward. 31, I believe the score was 31-13. It was Diosis, Aztecas led by Danny Melchor, two touchdowns versus Angels, Sandy Carrera, and Paolo Ariz. But they put up a good, you know, good slate on that. But Diosis, kind of the staple team beginning of the season in the District of Mexico. Both teams from the District of Mexico, so it was kind of an internal clash there. Morelos Heat was the first matchup of the game. It was 44-18 versus the Panthers, the Panteras. And Morelos Heat, which is the undefeated team in the LIBF, looking for a perfect season coming into next weekend. They're going into the LIBF Bowl in Cuernavaca, and it will be the Heat, the Morelos, taking on the Diosas Aztecas for the LIBF Bowl Championship. So we'll see what we can get out there, and we look forward to Oscar Mel 16, which is Oscar Moda A, who's part of the Nuestro Mexico newspaper group, and we thank him for the tweetcast as well. So you can follow him at Oscar Mal 16 for all the latest news on the LIBF, as well as you can go to the Twitter feed, the official Twitter feed, at LIBF Oficial. So that's pretty much the women's slate on there for this weekend. A lot of women's gridiron football, and more so in Australia. Like I said, it's a really hotbed right now. There's a lot of girls interested. Women are just participating left and right. We want to give a hats out to Peter Farrar, like we said before last week. Give him credit for starting the Female Gridiron League of Queensland. It's kind of a staple lead there. It's a model that most every other league in that country should follow. It's an amazing work behind the scenes from a lot of people to make it happen. So we want to give everybody a shout-out in the FGLQ and continue success as they go in forward with Gridiron Queensland as their backing. And we hope that that's the case. We also had some notable awards for the FGLQ, which was 2013 Offensive MVP Riley Hodgson, as well as Amy Henry ADD Award winner Brooke Smith. Rookie of the Year there was Tammy Napier. The Coaches Award went to Carmen Wire. The Encouragement Award to Jesse Springs. The Defensive Award to D.D. Hobbs. And as well, we mentioned earlier, the promotion of Rob McKinnon to the Queensland Women's State team that will field teams to get ready for the IFAF tournament in 2017. So I know I'm out of breath. So, Erica, any thoughts on that?
No, that was a lot of information, though. That, I liked it, though. You sound like, from what you're saying about the Australian League, that it is that it's a lot better run than the U.S. League. Is that am I understanding that right?
The traditional side of the gridiron, in other words, the traditional game, which is full kit game, just like the NFL. This is brand new for Australia altogether. It's empowering women to participate in traditional football. And the FGLQ story goes back to last year when they literally, from scratch, they took it upon themselves to create a league for the women's league only. and they went up to the traditional men's leagues that have been in existence for a long time, and they offered, you know, for them to help them back them up and field their clubs on the women's side. So they were received with some good positives, and they put in a lot of work. And like I said, Peter Farrar takes all the credit at this point, but there's a lot of people behind the scenes that obviously participated in the success of it. And that's the staple league. The Queensland League is the staple league right now that to follow. And then from there, they branched out to the Victoria region. So if you take a, you know, an Australian map, you can pretty much see the different regions there. So Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, those are kind of the regions. And they're basically fielding leagues in each individual part of the states. Their goal is really to get all these leagues to a high level of competitiveness, just like they would in the U.S., you know, with the Women's Football Alliance and the Independent Women's Football League in Canada with the Maritime and the Western Women's Canadian Football League. They want to get it to a high level of, you know, a good quality football, because their goal is to field the best players from each state's squads and put them in the tournament, in the IFAB tournament in 2014, then compete against Team USA and Team Canada and all the other teams that obviously participated in this past year. So their hopes are really high.
Okay.
Yep. So let's go into NFL Week 15 then. What was your, you know, your playoff picture here? Looking forward coming into this Sunday. I know you were hopeful your Pats would clinch, and that didn't happen. So let's start there. And New England almost edges Miami, but Miami somehow pulls out and takes care of Brady, not on his comeback today.
I was definitely hoping, you know, with the win today, they could have clinched the AFC East and could have tied Denver for first seed in the AFC. It didn't happen, so we don't quite have the AFC East cinched up yet. I'm not worried about it because Miami's still two games behind us. But, you know, it would have been nice to go just to have that cinched up. But, you know, the Patriots have to stop relying on last-minute comebacks. You know, we need to be playing better out, you know, throughout the entire game. It just puts way too much pressure on both the offense and the defense when you come down to last minute like that. We're pretty hurt right now with Gronk being out the rest of the season. Tompkins and Dobson are both out. Our defense is pretty hurt as well. So, 10 wins on the season for as hurt as we've been is I think, a pretty big accomplishment. It's hard for Patriots fans because we're so used to just steamrolling a lot and for just not, you know, just being, oh, we won the AFC East, oh, look, we're first seed. So this is just a little bit of just kind of a different change of pace for us. I'm not real worried necessarily. It's just, adjustment. But, hopefully Dobson and Tompkins will be back next week when we play the Ravens so that Brady has a little more weapons and doesn't put so much pressure on him. But, yeah.
So, Erica, at this point, do you feel like Miami, it looks like Miami still has a shot to get into the playoffs, which is a good positive for them given all the stuff that's been going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, they have. I think they said that with the win today, they're 6th seed, I think. So they have a chance to take probably one of the wild card spots. So, yeah, with the win today, their playoff hopes are alive. So that is, you know, good for Miami and their fans.
Thursday was a shocker because San Diego somewhat ups, you know, pulls a win against Denver, and nobody thought that was going to happen. And now San Diego sits in the hunt mode.
Yeah, I know. Playoffs, you know, it seems like this year, more so than previous years, that the playoffs are in both the AFC and the NFC are still pretty wide open this late in the year. It seems like usually everything's pretty cinched up, but we're pretty wide open in both conferences. So.
Yeah, and I mean, the only person that's clinched, I think, or the only team that's clinched so far is the Seahawks, and that's just because they obviously they got 12 wins. Everybody else is still on the cusp, and then the next closest person to clinch should have been Denver on Thursday. If they would have won, they would have clinched. And now they obviously have to wait another week to work with, but I'm pretty sure they'll clinch at this point, given that, you know, their season that they've had. Now, you know, we talked about the East. Let's go into that since we're there already. So New England at this point technically would be number two seed or number three.
Mm-hmm.
The stats that I got was if Cincinnati somehow pulls out a win tonight against Pittsburgh, which they should, that's basically what everybody's thinking, then mm-hmm. Cincinnati would have to run the table to acquire their number two seed. We're looking at the Patriots losing next week or the week after, or even if they won one and lost one, as long as Cincinnati runs the table, they would earn their number two seed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you have
so that's a good sign
too, because the Chiefs won today, which means they're 11-3 now. So, which, you know, puts them in the thick of things, because that means they're tied with Denver right now for first seed. So
the toss up is now we have Broncos, Chiefs, and given tonight's results, we might have Cincinnati third and New England fourth, or in that aspect of it, I think.
Possibly, yeah. It depends on how these games work out. But, yeah, the Cincinnati runs the table, because if they win tonight, they're 10-4, which gives them the same record as the Pats. So we have two 11-3 teams and two 10-4 teams in the AFC.
Yeah,
the team
to be looking from the outside in at this point would be between Miami and Baltimore, based on obviously Baltimore's performance on Monday.
Yep, exactly.
So to your point, yeah, this is kind of still up in the air. There's no guarantee here this week.
Yeah.
So we'd have to wait till next week for the AFC picture even to have some sort of a number one clincher, just like Seattle has done
mm-hmm.
in the NFC.
Yeah.
And
well,
so,
you know, the Ravens, what was that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, as I say, the Ravens play the Lions tomorrow. And if the Ravens win, that gives them and Miami are 8-6. So they would be, but if the Ravens lose, they're 7-7, which puts Miami's record ahead of them. So,
Yeah, and can you believe that
the
Jets are still in the mix, in the hunt?
I know.
It's kind of unbelievable, isn't it?
I know. It is. And the Colts did clinch the AFC South, though.
Yeah, no, they won the division. Yeah, and to your point, I think there's no question that they're in it. I mean, they're in already. So we already knew that they had the potential for doing it. And that actually, it's a good feel-good story for them there. Rebounding off the coaching
mm-hmm.
Situation last year, and had to go through all that.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see, I guess, what Baltimore does tomorrow. But, yeah, like you said, the AFC is just still very much open. I still cannot believe that the Jets are in it. They, you know, they lost to the Panthers today, but that somebody like the Jets could get in, to me, is pretty insane.
Yeah, I mean, they would. You're talking like the number 1-5 seed in the AFC would have to literally lose the next 2 weeks in order for the 10, you know, number 7-9 to even have a shot at even a wild card, which is kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
So, Erica, new coach in Washington is the rumor. What's your thoughts on that new coach in Washington? You think he's out? You think Shanahan's out, especially today after, you know, trying to do a 2-point conversion there towards the end? Everybody's questioning it. If you get in, obviously nobody cares. You won, but since they've lost, I think it's, I don't know, it's 6 in a row now, or if I'm correct. You think that's it?
Yeah.
If he's done?
I read today Shanahan doesn't want to leave, but I think that with the contention between RG3 and Shanahan, and it seems like the owner's affinity for RG3, I'm thinking that they probably let Shanahan go and hire somebody that gets along with RG3 better and maybe lets RG3 do what he wants a little more. which to me is just a horrible strategy. When you hire a coach that will pander to a quarterback, you get a team that doesn't have solid leadership. And letting Shanahan go because of RG3 is a huge mistake. The players work for the coach, not the other way around. And so I think that it's probably a good bet to say Shanahan is let go, but I think it would be a huge mistake for the Redskins organization to do that. He's a good coach. I mean, he's proven that.
Yeah, I think he had an off year this year, and I think that just the way it is, he has an off year. Will he end up in Texas? Rumors are already spreading that he might end up in Houston at this point if he does get ousted from Washington, which would be actually pretty good for Houston because a solid coach like that with the experience and has always taken his teams for this year to the playoffs, I mean, that's probably a good sign for Texans.
Yeah, for sure. I think he needs to find somewhere that will let him run the team the way he wants to, because he seems like he's a little bit, like a control freak, a little bit like Belichick. You know, you get a guy like Belichick who says, listen, if you let me do what I want to do, I will get you the wins. I will get you, the rings, essentially. Kraft lets Belichick do what he wants, and I think Shanahan's the same way. I think Shanahan says, you let me run the team the way I want, I'll get you the wins, but if you don't let him run it really the way he wants and he's unhappy, it would be in the best interest for everybody for him to go somewhere where he can run things the way he wants. So, but some coaches, I think, don't mind, pandering to the owner, if you will. I think that Dallas is a perfect example of that. Jerry Jones runs that team. I think it's a mistake, and that's why Dallas isn't very good, because Jerry Jones says this is the way it's going to be, and you're going to run it like that or you won't coach. And, that's why Jimmy Johnson left. So Shanahan needs to go somewhere. I think Houston will be a good fit for him.
Yeah, and in New York, if we go to New York now, it's kind of it's a horrible season for the Giants. I mean, it's been horrible to begin with. Now Victor Cruz apparently is injured. And then Eli Manning piling on the interceptions, which some of those are not his fault, Denny's, to begin with. I mean, the higher percentage probably is, but for the most part, he's got 24 year-to-date, which is the worst performances you can have. But, he does have two rings, mm-hmm. so do we call this an off year in New York?
Yeah, I think you call it an off year. I don't think you can, see one season like this and say that the guy's, whatever. Even Tom Coughlin, I wouldn't fire the guy over this one season. I think you wait and try and get better and, find out why. I mean, there's got to be some reasons, but I wouldn't jump the gun and do anything rash for sure. But, yeah, it's an off year for them.
Now, Erica, I got a lot of tweets, and I know you're going to put your two cents in it, but Seattle hasn't won anything, like Scott said earlier in our previous shows. And at this point, the Seahawks seem to think that they're on a very good high, because obviously they have a hot quarterback. And I don't mean hot as in, physically and stuff like that. Just hot as in, performance-wise. Mm-hmm. But they have, Russell Wilson obviously has put up some good numbers. He's done really well for his season starts, and he's put up a nice record of being successful with the starts. Will we measure him with the championship ring at this point? Is that the next level for him? He has to get the Super Bowl win for him to be put up in the Brady's and the Mannings and all and the Roethlisbergers and everybody else's pretty much top notch quarterbacks.
I don't think so. I don't think a Super Bowl ring measures, is a necessarily good measure of a quarterback. I mean, you look at Dan Marino, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game, and the guy doesn't have a ring. So I think that it would be good for him, but I think that his statistics and the way he has led this team speak to how good he is. So I wouldn't say that a Super Bowl ring would necessarily prove him as a good quarterback. I think he's proven that.
Now, does anybody scare you right now they get a bye week, obviously, because they're already clinched. So in the NFC, the only two teams that I can see that would be a scary mode for them would be facing San Francisco three times in the year, if not four. I think it's four times in the year. It's more than that, right? It's probably they'll be on their fifth or sixth confrontation if they go into a wild card mode. If San Francisco gets there, in other words, it would be Seattle, San Francisco once more, and San Francisco seems to start to play good ball lately here. And then the other team that would surprise, you have Carolina coming off, a good swing here. You got New Orleans, which obviously didn't play as well today as everybody thought they would play, but the NFC is wide open, where you think one of those teams will bounce off Seattle, because Seattle's on such a high right now, 12-2. Everybody, obviously, in that part of the country and in their state, they see this team obviously going into the final game of the, for the Super Bowl. So, do you think any of those teams are going to be one of those teams that knocks them off?
I think Carolina, San Francisco, I think those two teams have a good chance of knocking off Seattle. San Francisco, Seattle and San Francisco, they just trade off their wins. I think divisional opponents are always hard to play. They're always harder to play. I don't know why it is, but, like the Patriots losing to Miami today, they beat better teams this year. I mean, they beat the Broncos, came back from a 24-point deficit. But for some reason, when you play your divisional opponents, it's always harder to beat them. Same with Broncos and the Chargers, this week. So I would say if anybody's going to knock Seattle off, it would be the 49ers in the playoffs. And Carolina, I say Carolina because Carolina has played some really tough football here the end of the season, and Carolina plays a similar style of play. Russell Wilson, I think, is a better quarterback than Cam Newton, but they have the same style, and I think it would be a pretty good game to watch, the Panthers and the Seahawks. So those, to me, are the two teams that could knock Seattle off.
Now I'm looking at the playoff NFC side of things now, and we take a look at Seattle being ranked one, of course, and already clinched, so they get their bye week. New Orleans literally didn't play a good game today, and I don't even know if they lost. Did they lose?
They haven't officially lost, but there's 16 seconds left, and it's 27-16, so they'll be losing.
Okay, so they might lose today. So there you go. So they lose. So they're, they go to Seattle, they lose. They go to St. Louis, they're losing. The question mark here is how durable is New Orleans in terms of going down the stretch. Philadelphia also, I think, lost today. I think it was 48-30 against Minnesota of all the teams. And we just talked about how, Minnesota's thinking of trading Adrian Peterson at this point and restructuring their coaching and their quarterback stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a mirror there. But Philadelphia still has a shot to impress in the next couple weeks. They were on a roll, so this is kind of a hiccup. And then the Bears today, the return of Cutler, which, everybody didn't want at this point, but it came back, and unfortunately it's a win. And I say unfortunately because there's a lot of fans that just, I guess, didn't want Cutler back at this point because McCown had played so well. But what's your thoughts on Chicago being for real? I mean, they're the fourth seed right now.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think even if they go into the playoffs, I'd say they lose right away. I just don't see them as a lasting, durable team. Their record after today, the Eagles and the Bears have they're both 8-6. So they're tied for what, fourth seed, I think.
Fourth seed.
So I don't see the Bears doing much. Even if they get in, the NFC North is still well within you know, the Lions are 7-6, the Packers are 6-6, so, you know, things are still very competitive in that division, but I don't think they're going to do much at all, to be honest.
Well, the chances of the Bears winning the division are greater now than they were 2 weeks ago, given the fact that the Lions have dropped a couple games, and the Lions are still in the hunt for the division, not necessarily, obviously, getting into the seed, but at this point they're 4th seed, the Bears, and then you have Arizona that nobody's talking about. 8-5, Arizona sneaking in. They're in the hunt. All it would take is for the Panthers to lose one or two games down the stretch and Arizona to continue to win, and they would get in pretty much at this point. So that would be a surprising the most surprising team out of all season would be Arizona getting into the wild card.
Yep. Yeah, they're tied with Tennessee right now. It looks like the fourth quarter just started, so, you know, they could win tonight. And, yeah, they would be 9-5, which puts them at the Panthers. Well, the Panthers are 9-4, but puts them right up there. So, and like you said, that's a surprise to everybody, especially the way they started out the season. So the way they started out the season was pretty mediocre, not real impressive. So they're finishing strong for sure.
Now you take them, and they've been a thorn on the Niners side, and they still have to play, I believe, the Niners one more time. So Arizona would be the team to bounce the Niners off to a loss and elevate themselves into the playoff, maybe a 6th seed at this point, depending on what Carolina does the next 2 weeks. The scenario would be that Arizona would knock off Carolina and put them in a wild card. Then you have Arizona going to 6th seed mode, or even a fifth seed. So it's kind of interesting that Carson Palmer, which a lot of us have talked about how, you know, he's inconsistent, but somehow this year he's kind of just it's in the background, and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, you know, the Cardinals might make the playoffs. So it's kind of interesting.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. The Niners, Erica, we talked about them, and they beat the Bucs today. They have won 9 out of the last 11. So would you consider them a hot streak right now? They're on a hot streak?
Yeah, I think so. I think especially after beating Seattle last week, I think that gave them a lot of confidence, kind of gave them a little boost to carry them into the end of the season. But, yeah, I would say that they are on a hot streak, yeah.
Yeah, and then Frank Gore's playing good. They got Crabtree back. Vernon Davis is played a good game today. Kaepernick it kind of looked like the old Kaepernick, which, you know, elusive and really, you know, evading the rush. So I think they're ready for Seattle. If they have to face Seattle one more time, I really think that's going to be another great matchup.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Now, any surprises on E.J. Manuel bouncing back today with the Bills' win over the Jaguars?
Yeah, you know, I was surprised that the Bills came out with a win today. I mean, the Jaguars have been on a streak, so that's why it surprised me. The Bills have not been... They've been mediocre to not real impressive this year. And then the Jaguars, you know, mid-season just kicked it in gear and have been winning games. And so it did surprise me that the Bills were able to come out with that win today.
And I'm a big fan of that kid. I think he'll improve going into next season. I don't think they have a bad team. They just need a little more weapons. But I think the Bills are on the upswing. The Jaguars, I mean, we have to give them their props. You know, they did bounce back after an 0-8 start. You know, they could have quit, technically, if you really think about it, but they didn't. I mean, they went into every game after 0-8, and they made it a second season. So now they're playing a second season, and their record, you know, reflects that they've obviously bounced back, and they want to play for, a good finish. And I think that's, you know, even today, they got beat by a touchdown, so that shows you that obviously they haven't given up.
Yeah.
So, and then Glennon.
I do want to say.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that in the Packers-Cowboys game, there's a minute and a half left, and the Packers just pulled ahead by 1 point. So.
Oh, really? The Packers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Against Dallas?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, nobody thought Flynn would do anything against Romo. I mean, everybody coming in here was like, "Oh, it's a good win for the Cowboys." Oh my God, these Cowboys!
Yeah.
Don't they just surprise you every week? Like, they come to lose. That's what somebody tweeted me.
Yeah.
Dallas always comes to lose, and it shocks you when they win. I don't know if that's the first statement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. They were supposed to roll right over the Packers. You know, they didn't have Aaron Rodgers and. It was supposed to be an easy win for the Cowboys, and the Packers are putting up a fight. So,
yeah, I mean, Lacy's still a durable back. I mean, whether you put a good quarterback back there or not, if you have a good running game, he's a good back, and you put him in a good position, I mean, he's able to score. Do you think Rodgers comes back at this point, or they just swing the season by and they just, you know, let him heal up until next camp?
You know, I think it all depends on if they have a chance, you know, at making the playoffs, I think you bring Rodgers back. If he's relatively, you know, you don't want him to re-injure just for the chance to, you know, this postseason, because he could really hurt himself. You know, you could get a thing like Gronk, I think. You know, bringing Gronk back, you know, postseason last year, he re-broke the arm, and then he was gone until, you know, way late this season, so you got to be careful with stuff like that. But I think that if he's fully healed and they go postseason, for sure that's a no-brainer. But you just got to be careful. You got to make sure he's completely healed, or you risk damaging your franchise for longer. You know.
Okay, so now after this conversation, the NFC picture would be very weird, because if Green Bay pulls off the win today, they would be 7-6. Dallas would fall to 7-7 in the mix.
Yep.
Detroit on Monday, if they don't win against Baltimore on Monday, Detroit would fall to 7-7. So that would be tied basically with Dallas on a tiebreaker. That also would give Green Bay an opportunity to sneak by. I have to kind of dissect Detroit and Dallas' remaining schedule, but for the most part, we could see, on a worst-case scenario, we could see Detroit and Dallas bounced off and Green Bay sneak in. That would be very strange for both those teams.
Yeah, we could even see the Packers win the NFC North if the Bears lose. If the Packers win tonight and the Bears lose, like, let's say next week, and the Packers win, that would put the Packers at, you know, 8-6, and the Bears at 8-7 if that happened next week. So potentially the Packers could still win their division. So
yeah, the North is really scary because there's still three teams really vying for that spot, and nobody's really taking control of it, which is kind of scary in that sense, I guess. Yeah. And that scenario probably, you know, is also a good scenario to play out.
Yeah. Yeah, so the NFC is still, you know, that's what I said. The AFC and the NFC this year are just, everyone's just neck and neck, and it seems so weird to me. Usually we just have a real clear picture of the pole season by now, but not this year.
Now, Denver, let's just go to Denver at this point. Denver, everybody assumed, obviously the win against San Diego. So now they just have to, you know, go 1-2, or they have to go 2-1 at this point. It's remaining three games. So they would have to either lose one along the way, and they'd still be in. So they're in it already. So they have to win one more just to clinch. So I think it's a sure bet that they clinch.
Yeah, it's just, you know, with the Chiefs winning today, putting them at 11-3, the Broncos would have to win, and the Chiefs would have to lose, or, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say, because the Broncos, like you said, losing to the Chargers was kind of a one-off. It was kind of weird. I think it's pretty safe to say that the Broncos will clinch their division, but if they don't, you know, play really well these these next games, they could see themselves losing that division if Kansas City wins all the rest of their games. So I think it's still pretty pretty competitive there.
Yeah, and it's like to your point, this is we're still going into week 16 and we still have no real clarity because there's nobody besides Seattle that's clinched, probably the more probable one that'll clinch next week. And there's still going to be question marks even next week based on seedings and the remaining schedule, who gets in and who gets out. And you could end up bouncing somebody that currently is in by record. And to your point, next week or the week after, they would literally be bounced off completely. So it's going to be interesting to see all the scenarios play out.
It is, yeah. It is really Indianapolis, it looks like, is the only one who's officially clinched their division. Everyone else, like the Seahawks and Broncos, are both in the playoffs for sure. But the Colts are the only ones that have clinched their division, I think.
Yeah, that 9-5, I think they did because everybody else was, they didn't have the closest person to them is like four wins out from their second place.
Yeah.
So they pretty much won out already. On that note, since we're talking Indianapolis, do you think they have the potential to obviously go deep, given their latest, they played pretty well so far the last 2 weeks, and today they played pretty well too. They basically romped on Houston, but there was no surprise there. Mm-hmm. I think I don't know how much more can we say about the Texans. They have just laid an egg.
I
mean, 12 in a row. They lose their coaching staff. The wheels are off the car. I mean, they're looking forward to competing with the Rams for the draft picks, I think, at this point.
Yeah. You know, I don't see the Colts going real deep. I like the Colts, but I just don't see they have the staying power that a lot of to stay competitive in the AFC like these other teams do. They did, they beat the Broncos earlier this year, but the Colts, they just seem like they've actually gotten worse as the season has gone on. I think if you put their Colts team now against the Broncos right now, I don't think it would be a contest, to be honest. So I don't see them going real deep in the playoffs.
All right. So the next question we have is somebody tweeted me, do we keep Foles and release Vic?
Yes. That is an unequivocal yes. Foles has proved himself, I think. I think he's proved himself at least to get the starting job. I wouldn't say, oh, my gosh, I wouldn't be giving him his awards yet, but I would say that he's proved that he is a better fit for Philadelphia, and he's proved that he's a better quarterback than Vic. At this point, Vic is he's injured frequently. I don't feel like he's good leadership material. I just don't feel like he's good for that franchise. So, that's a yes.
All right. So the other tweet is, you guys don't talk Browns. So what do you think of the Browns for next season? Because obviously they've played very good games in the last 4.5, 5 weeks, and they've been in every game and just seem to be losing every game. So what's the prognosis from us on the Browns for 2000 for the next season, obviously?
I think the Browns have a good this season has been a good season for them to build on for next year. You know, the Browns have always been just kind of one of those teams you forget about, unfortunately. They're just always there but not doing a lot, never really the worst, past years, I guess. But I think they've built a really good foundation this year to for next year that I see them being, a good team next year. I see them being really competitive.
Yeah, and I think that everybody thinks that Whedon is not the answer. So if they find a reliable quarterback, which they do have on staff, it's going to be one of them three on staff that needs to mature and evolve. They have Josh Gordon, exactly. Which is an outstanding player in itself as a staple, especially with Trent Richardson going to Indianapolis now. So you have a good nucleus of young talent in Cleveland, and they played very well. I mean, to me, I think they played all season. They played very well. They just haven't been able to pull out games. So they lose their games in the fourth quarter more so than not. Like today, they had a chance to beat the Bears, and they just somehow they just didn't do it, and they could have. So I think it bodes well for Brown fans next season that they have a competitive team. I really think they play hard defensively. I think they're somewhat very good. I think they just play in the AFC North, where Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and to your point, Cincinnati they overshadow them at this point.
Packers won.
Oh, Packers won?
Yep, Packers beat. I just got the alert that they blew their lead, but I guess there's 37 seconds left, but the Packers do have the ball, so I think it's safe to say they won.
So Dallas gets so we put the picture in perspective here. Dallas was 7-6 coming in, so they're 7-7, and obviously Green Bay goes to 7-6, ties them with Detroit. So you're looking at Green Bay being 9th seed right now in the hunt, Detroit being 8th still, and that bounces Dallas to 10th seed, which would be in the hunt. So it's a battle between Arizona, Detroit on Monday, which to see how well Detroit does. Like to your point, if they lose out, if they lose on Monday, it really bumps Green Bay up a notch in the hunt. So they might be 8th seed when it's all said and done on Monday, and that's pretty impressive given that they have no Aaron Rodgers at the helm so far.
Yep.
All right. So we are getting excited next week. Next week is Women's Gridiron in Australia, week three. But we're going to dissect week two because it's going to be on tape delay on next Saturday. So week two, which is Victoria Maidens taking on the Western Australia Angels. You can watch it on the Legends Football League on YouTube. We will come back next week and let you guys know how that worked out and what's the game. The end result was they obviously it was a close game, 32-26. Both teams played pretty well. Very impressive win by Victoria, the Victoria Maidens. An all-Aussie team, by the way. No U.S. imports on that team. So shout-out to them for an outstanding first win in the inaugural season of LFL Australia. Tryouts, I'll let you guys know. Tryouts are still going on in the U.S. leagues as well as international. You can follow us on Twitter on Fast Follow Fridays, and we have all the leagues that we follow and network with on Fast Follow Fridays. If you want us to give you a shout-out on Fast Follow Fridays, please let us know, and we'd be more than happy to do that. The U.S. leagues tryouts are currently going on right now, and you can visit at WFA Football, at IWFL, at MWFL, at WWCFL, as well as at SSFL and at PGFL, and all those are Twitter links, and those are all the leagues that we follow. And you can get the dates and times, locations for all the squads that are doing tryouts for the 2014 season. The WFA and IWFL seasons kick off in late April all the way down to June, July. Then we have the Australian scene. Once again, it's going to be an earlier scene this year. From what we gathered from the FGLQ, it's going to be probably in May in the U.S., slate schedule, May through, I believe, November. So it's going to be an exciting time in 2014 for the women's game because there's a lot of things happening, especially in Australia, the buzz in Australia, the buzz with everything that's happening. And the women's game is coming from the Australian country. So it's an exciting time for women's football there. The other slate is Mexico. There's about four leagues in Mexico. FXF scores will be up. The championship, congratulations to the Femenil Gigantes, which is the Giants women's gridiron team. Congratulations to them for winning the FXF 2013 winter season. And that's back-to-back championships for them. So we are giving them a shout-out for their outstanding season that they had this year. And a lot of women's, Erica, a lot of women's gridiron leagues internationally that nobody knows about. And unfortunately, that's why we're here to cover it all and kind of give everybody a perspective of that women do play American football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's important, you know, it's not, people don't know about it. And what they do know of it is that it's fluffy and it's ineffective and that, you know, it's not a big deal. But it is a big deal, and these women work hard, and they have talent, and so it is important that everybody knows and that you guys get the information out there. That's awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, since they're not in the limelight, most people don't even realize that women can play American football. And I think once you get to see a game and you go out there and do it, and I'm not talking about just the lingerie version of it because that's the primary, you know, focus on TV is the lingerie version of it, but for the most part, at the start. But if you go see a real full kit game, and obviously Tackle Girls documentary is still in line. I'm going to get with Bill Harris this week and see if they're still in line for the Super Bowl preview. And if they are, then obviously that's going to be a huge boost for the women's game as well. The Tackle Girls documentary being on the slate for the Super Bowl. We want to also let you know that there's a Gridiron Girls documentary. You can follow us on our timeline at gridirongirls_DLC, and that follows the Orlando Anarchy. It was the first documentary before the Tackle Girls football feature on the Team USA. So both those films are very inspiring. They kind of showcase the ups and downs of, you know, what it takes to play American football on the women's level side and the competitiveness that it is. So check them out on our Twitter feed at gridirongirls_DLC, or you can check out at Tackle Girls as well. I want to give a shout-out to at Miss Gridiron 9. She's got the website, MissGridiron.com, and she partners with us as well for news and notes around the league. So the network that we have and we've built, we're very proud of, and I want to wish everybody happy holidays as we go through the Christmas, you know, December. Happy holidays to everybody and for supporting our brand as well. You can go to the No Joke Football brand site, which is Zazzle.com/GridironBeauties, and there's a 15% off code that you can use. It's use code WINTERWARMTH, and you can get 15% off all the Gridiron gear that we have. We have our popular Gridiron line. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's called Gridiron, and it's a Gridiron line that we created. It's been very popular. It's sort of like a train cap mode. It's Gridiron scripted on the front. You've got the player position on the left, and you have a nice little slogan to add to that position. So check it out at Zazzle.com/GridironBeauties. Make sure you use code WINTERWARMTH. Anything else, Erica, before we send off for this week 15 Sunday?
Nope. I think do go check out that at Zazzle. I was looking around, and they have some of the cool stuff. Very fun stuff to wear. I loved it all. So do go check it out.
Awesome. So, Erica, let everybody know where you're going to be at Tackle Girls 12 on Twitter, and then obviously you're going to have your new video up this week, obviously, for the gridirongirls.org.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure yet what it'll be on, but, hope I didn't get my video out for last week. Kind of had a busy week, but I'll hope to get one out. You know, maybe do a playoff picture, kind of like what we did tonight. On my Twitter page, at PatsFangirl12, you can find my YouTube link. Subscribe to the channel, and you'll get emailed when I post new videos.
So great. So week 15 kind of still up in the air, so we'll see what week 16 comes up with in terms of the playoff picture. I know I'm a happy guy because my Rams beat up on New Orleans today, and that was kind of a shocker. Win's a win, and I really loved it. We'll look forward to our draft picks, I guess, at this point, but that's a win.
Yeah.
New England is still in the hunt, and you, for sure, you're in the playoffs, so you don't have to rub it in my face in that way. But I used to definitely in the playoffs, right? For the most part, it seems like the scenarios are going to change, like you said. We'll see how much more clarity we get next week in terms of the both playoff pictures and which teams get in, which teams get out. So for Erica Lynn Anderson, this has been Oscar Lopez. We welcome you next week to come back and check out Gridiron Beauties Radio. Please network with us. If you can do our shares on Facebook, share our posts on Facebook. You're welcome to go to Facebook at Gridiron Beauties to post any women's Gridiron related items or any tryout information or anything like that. So thank you for supporting our brand and for helping us out. And you can also go to Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauties for all the No Joke Football brand apparel. We'll look forward to week 16 next week. So have a great Sunday, everybody, and look forward to tonight's matchup of the Bengals against the Steelers.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, Erica.
Bye.